This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Hello. Good afternoon. I see one or two of you who I haven't met before. I want to introduce myself. My name is Ocean. It's really nice to have this opportunity to practice with one another. Together, remember that is our sign for this session, together. I like it when these little spontaneous moments like that arise, togetherness, and how this sign of together has become the theme of this session. Because really, everything that the Buddha taught us can be condensed to one teaching. No separation of self. There is no separate self. Truly, deeply realizing this and allowing it to enter into your body, allow that to be your practice. Deeply feel and deeply know that there is this lack of separation. And that is what Dogen is saying when he says to study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be actualized by myriad things. When we are actualized by the myriad things, our body and our mind, as well as the body and mind of others, drop away until there is no trace of realization remaining. And this no trace continues endlessly. It continues endlessly. When self, so to speak, when self is dropped, everything that we have been using to set ourselves apart or that we use to block ourselves from the universe, what we use to keep ourselves separate is no longer there to hinder us. And then we chant, for example. It's the same as feelings, perceptions, impulses, consciousness. O Shariputra, all dharmas are marked by emptiness. They don't appear nor disappear, are not tainted nor pure. They do not increase nor decrease. Therefore, emptiness, in emptiness, no form. And on the sutra goes. When there is nothing to gain, There is nothing to lose. There is nothing to prove. Because there is no gain, there is no loss. We already have everything. Because you are an expression of that wholeness, of that universe, right here, right now. And then, when we realize that, we can start to act like that. That this moment is a complete expression, lacking nothing. And we are completely a part of it. If we realize that and we show up in that way, you are expressing the precepts. When you remove that barrier or the obstruction, I'm curious what the word the interpreter used. I used I think barrier. Oh, I like that one too. No barriers, Zen. Because when you are expressing yourself in that way, because you realize that you already are expressing in that way, this moment is a complete expression, lacking nothing. And when we remove the barrier that we've been using to maybe try to keep ourselves locked in our hotel room, when we realize that we are completely a part of it, it still hurts. It hurts either way. So, but now you're not using so much energy and feeding that into propping up that obstruction, that ego. That ego, that need to be right, or a need to be witnessed, a need to be validated. We're already validated by the universe. And that's enough. That's why we, the teachers here, use terms like birthright. It's inherent and intrinsic. It's not something that can be given. It's not something that can be found or lost. One of my old teachers would say, it's like when you ask me, where is the path? When you feel that you don't know your way and you're lost. Well, the way is right on top of your head, right here. A path is made by walking. Go forth. I get it. You're scared sometimes. I'm scared too. But if we're going to get hurt anyways, I'd rather do it like this with all of you. You see that? Well, if I'm going to be quoting George Bernard Shaw, I think we're going to need to work together.
It's a little bit wordy. He says,
He says, "This is the true joy of life, the being used for a purpose, recognized by yourself as a mighty one, being a force of nature instead of a feverish, selfish little clod of ailments and grievances, complaining that the world will not devote itself to making you happy. I am of the opinion that my life belongs to the community. And as long as I live, it is my privilege to do for it whatever I can. I want to be thoroughly used up when I die. For the harder I work, the more I live. Life is no brief candle to me. It is a sort of splendid torch which I have got a hold of for a moment. And I want to make it burn as brightly as possible before handing it on to future generations. I like that line. Being a force of nature instead of a feverish, selfish little clod of ailments and complaints. I didn't need to be so called out like that. It is my privilege. That line, he says. When we look in this way, with that kind of eye, that kind of dharmic eye, we can see it. We can see how our actions ripple out from us. I mean, you could experiment with this yourselves. I remember when I was living in New York City, I got on the metro one day and was bouncing along through the tunnels. You should try it yourself. You could try it yourself on BART.
That's what they call the metro here. They're clearly wrong.
Obviously.
It's called the metro. I think they're in France.
Just sitting there and noticing all of the people around me. Noticing without judgment, just looking, and then setting my feet firmly on the floor of the car, my hands gently on my legs. I'm just breathing. And then look again. What will happen?
Oh, think you're separate?
You think you're separate? You actually have an impact. What a curse, but also what a blessing. What a charge. As Mike said, that hand from generations past, pushing, supporting, standing on our shoulders as giants. When you look in that way, with that kind of eye, you can see more clearly what is actually happening. And then we can turn our eyes to the precepts. How could I kill? How could I steal? I would never hurt myself in that way. I would never hurt myself that way. Myself and the myself outside of myself. How could I kill? No eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, as we chant. No color, no sound, no smell, no taste, no touch. No object of mind, no realm of eyes, and on and on. And no consciousness, and no attainment. Because what would it be to attain when you are truly attaining? Nothing. That is when, as Dogen says, the self and others advance. It's the same as leaving no trace in the bathroom. It's the same as replacing the coffee and brewing another pot when the one that is there is empty. It's the same as aligning the shoes outside the door so that they are perfectly pairs. It's the same as chopping vegetables. It's the same as sewing your rakusu. I've been thinking about this recently as I've been observing you meditating. It's such a strange privilege, this seat, to be here facing the center now. I've spent 20 years looking at the wall. Now I am turning my head. When I see you, when I see how you practice, I see the many bodies in the Zendo. And I think, what an opportunity to practice in this way together.
Auspicious.
This auspicious Dharma, this way. And we are here together, sitting in this posture of the Buddha. Whatever that shape might be, no, whatever that shape might be, it is the noble posture of the Buddha.
Even if it's leaning.
Even if it's leaning a little, or maybe it's a little sore or a little sleepy, having a hard time staying awake, nonetheless, it is the noble posture of the Buddha, without a doubt. So sincere. Even if it's sleepy. That is what we mean by actualizing this fundamental way together, together, right? Together. And this posture is important because it supports the work. Nothing else really works quite the same way. You can't be too comfortable. You can't be too hard. That middle way. So we come together to actualize and to express the precepts together. Well, then how could this be anything other than the truth? We sit together in oneness, expressing oneness together. That deep realization, the precepts are already manifest. Even the precepts, especially the precepts. I've been sitting the last few days. I've been thinking, what are the precepts? If I had to say it in the most clear, concrete way, are you guys ready? I can feel your eyes intently looking at me.
Hey, this is mine.
Hey, this is mine. You're going to have to figure it out. Your own line, okay? But my line. Well, you can borrow it. The precepts are the description of what a Buddha is. Okay. We can kind of agree on that for now.
It's just.
Just the description of what a Buddha is and what that function is.
Very great. I have a flux of memory. Definitely talk to some of you so directly in one way, and then talk to someone else in another way. So I'm just, I don't know, I'm playing with this. I've never done this before. So I wanted to tell a story. Oh, this might be actually a hard time to switch into voice. Anyway, okay. I'm committed. Okay. So this is a little story about a koan. A koan is a teaching story, the public case. That's really what the two kanji know. The way I like to think of it is just kind of like, this is good to tell. This is nice. This is good to tell. Like, tell about this. share these stories. So this is a poem that comes from the tradition of Koryu Osaka. His name is Koryu Osaka. And he was a lay Rinzai master. And the koan is stop a distant temple bell. That's it. That's all you have. That's it. Okay. It doesn't even have handles. How do I pick it up? I don't know what to do with it. So yeah, that's what it's like. I spent a long time practicing in that kind of tradition. And why I've been this koan up particularly is because it's the koan that I sat with for an entire summer, just before I took the precepts myself. So for 3 months, every day, every Zazen period, I meditated like we are doing today and held this line. You know, it's, I was thinking about immediately, I get handed this thing that says, I stop the distant temple bell. Might as well tell the blind guy, you know, read aloud the first four pages. You know, it just felt like it just gets thrust upon me and doesn't, I don't know what to do with it. Doesn't have handles. I can't even pick it up. I don't know how to engage with this story. All of a sudden, there are all this frustration, all this frustration. And I realized I am incredibly lonely in the Zendo, was the thing that came up. It was so weird being the only deaf guy within miles, you know. It was so weird for so long. I'm not so lonely anymore. What's happening? But I realized that was the barrier, that was the wedge I was driving between myself and everyone else. If I wasn't deaf, I would have picked something else. It would have been, you know, nobody loves whatever. And so I test noticed, like on my little work desk, I have a lot of these little notes and little bits of inspiration, like we all do, you know, little things. I have a little collection of notes that I've been passed over the years from other practitioners. And they would say things like, you know, as the only Black practitioner in the Zendo, I really loved hearing your story about X, Y, and Z. I said, it was really inspiring. I like kind of stuffed them in this little thing in my desk. And there's a whole collection of them. It's like, and I realized that I still wasn't even letting that in, you know. But anyway, and this isn't a story about like, oh, like I'm really special because I was really different and apart and you're all you and I'm so different. But it was actually just like in these moments, I was just seeing how we were all clinging to each other. You know, and it's like to try and have this kind of perfect practice, it's like you can get really in the way. And so I'm sitting in this whole time of stop the distant temple bell, stop the distant temple bell. And you just think, what? Just like, why did they have to make it distant? Why did they have to make it about a sound? Why couldn't it be here? And I thought, and this line rang out in my head. And I tell you, for a week, I thought, well, how am I even supposed to find it if I'm deaf? No. Like, you know, like, this is what I was sitting on. And I was just like roiling, just torturing myself in it. And just trying to push through. And this koan, which has nothing to do with the bell, put me right in place of this thing that I was resisting so hard. Because I was afraid to connect and to be vulnerable, just as we are. And I was going to use my deafness as the wedge, or my growing up poor, or my, you know, being gimpy, or whatever it is. I can, you know. So I sat the whole, you know, kind of summer with it, and, you know, there's this kind of formula you do when you sit with another teacher, and you know, you sit with them and then present the koan. You say, my name is Oshin, my practice is stop the distant temple bell. And then you give your response. And just my. My teacher said, yeah. She said, yeah. He said, I've been doing this for 30 years, and every student comes up and goes, bong, in my face. I said, so of course the deaf guy's going to sit in front of me and go. I'm broken through that barrier. And what was the barrier? It wasn't that I couldn't hear the bell was too far, it was too heavy, there was no handles, I couldn't pick it up. How am I even supposed to find it if I can't hear it? But the barrier was, I wasn't listening. I wasn't listening well. So how could it not be a complete whole expression of the precepts? How could it not be? This Buddha body, just as it is. Gimpy, deaf, sore, really wanting a proper latte. But by showing up completely for each moment as it is, even without an idea of how I'm supposed to respond to this moment, could be an impossible distant bell. Or how to tie that knot on Orioki. It could be stoking the fire. It could be doing yoga. It could be chopping the vegetables, making the rice, sewing your rakusu. All of these are activities of Buddha. Showing up wholeheartedly for what comes next, giving that moment our complete attention. How could that be anything other than a complete and global expression of all Buddha's seven precepts? So I say, don't wait. Don't wait to be perfect. Don't wait to show up. Don't wait till Sunday to be a bodhisattva. It starts in this moment. And then in this moment. Better if we just stayed here like this. But maybe there are some questions or some comments, so we can talk about that.
I have a question about the phrase, when you study yourself, you forget the self. Can you explain that a little bit more, please?
I want you to help me though. Yeah, no, so like let's find a moment where that made sense in your life. Like, what do you think that was like? What do you think that could be? A moment where you forgot yourself and you were just in that rhythm of the dance at the kitchen and it, things were just flowing, you know, and the sauce was right and
But that wasn't, I wasn't studying the self then. I wasn't thinking about the self when.
Maybe not thinking about the self is also studying the self too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, why get caught in that idea? Right? And what are we calling the self anyway? Because if the recipe calls for, you know, 12.07 ounce canned tomatoes, what's the self too? Right? So Dogen, you know, tells us to like to wash this was like there are eyes, you know, and it's like it could be that tender and that connected and just being like that. And so instructions are like really again now. Yeah, we also look at who we are, how we respond to situations, and our individual kind of like this small s self that we call Oshin and we call Mariko. We have to look at that too, but Dogen, the mystic, you know, he's talking about this self. What do you think of it when you forget the self? It's like, how can we completely drop that self to receive the self? Well, maybe he's just talking about don't get caught up on these things and just see your position in this wider interconnected space. It's like, oh, okay. I see how this connects. You could see, like, ah, when I put my hands like this and I just come back to my breath, I can feel the people around me just chill out a little more. You know, I felt that going to the supermarket, man, like, I gotta get this, I gotta get this. I'm thinking, like, I might not be, you know, being as skillful as I want to be. And I just like calm down, help somebody along the way, and do it. Oh, okay. I just like know that ripples out. So in that situation, it's like, yeah, this is also ultimately better for me too. Right? Because everybody's gonna be a lot more chill and relaxed and wanna help me out too, right? So it's like, okay. So even if we stay on this non-mystical level, it's like I can understand how this is good. Right? And at the pure mystical level, it's like I'm removing this barrier that I'm calling self and other. It's like the sea, you know, it's just like this cresting wave, and you're just like, oh, ocean. He's 2.3 meters in height and length and pulse, and you can kind of say I can measure it and know that's this form, and just like ignore water nature. It. Ignore that there's another wave over there, and that at its base, it's all the same thing. So Dogen is saying, we have this peaking, this cresting identity and awareness, like, right, we're here, but also don't neglect this vast interconnectedness. So, yeah, if you read the sutras, they talk about the really kind of the interplay and the balance of these a lot more. And Zen, I feel like we're really heavy hammering that home a little bit. We don't have opportunities in our life. There's not a lot of culture that supports us being this introspective and being this mystical and looking at these things. So we need to really bring that up to live a good harmonious life. That's what happened. And no, I just
I would like to make a poem, and taking say some overall that what a beautiful common brain Dharma book. I was thinking something, and you were saying it, and I was listening to it. And even though I would never hear such a Dharma talk with you, the single word, I was saying to myself, wait a minute, this is my talk. So, how mystical that sounds, I don't know.
Oh, I know what you're saying. We keep robbing each other of talks. I keep
Yeah.
going and tearing the talk up and tearing it. And
So,
it's a beautiful feeling to be connected like this,
yeah, it is
that
mostly feeling, but
connectedness, yeah.
I don't want to stop that now that we agree that we actualize precepts together. I have a confession to make. At the end during the first Dharma talk, it was Ocean again who said about the grandmother, Michael. And I said, oh my God, my grandmother. It's been quite a while. I did talk to her, and with these changes of the time, day and night, she tried to call me, I tried to call her, she didn't reply. Being here, being quiet, couldn't find the time. I left from here. I was for this all forgot my grandma. When left from here, went back to the room and sat down in peace. And my hand just took the phone, opened the Wi-Fi, and called my grandmother. I was trying to be very quiet so that Pamela in the next room doesn't hear me, because I was speaking. So, speaking to my grandmother, who is she's already 80 years old, but Devadasi hasn't stopped complaining and being furious one moment in her life. So I knew I had to confront that. So she asked me what time is it, and I exaggerated a bit, so it was 10 a.m. and here, no, it was 11 a.m. and I thought it was 10 a.m. And I was saying, oh my God, why did I do that? Why didn't I say it was 11 a.m.? And then I said, okay, no work, you have time. We haven't given your presets yet. You have 2 days' time. And then I said, okay, I have time. And then so the story went on, and then it came about the weather. So I had to say that the weather was bad. So something like it was raining, but it wasn't raining. So I became the same. And then I just turned off the phone, just saying to myself that, okay, here it's just unstoppable. So I give up. That was my confession to make.
This is like, I think there's a special place in hell for people who break the vow of silence to call their grandma. I'll let you know that this is an egregious breach of temple etiquette and the precepts and the Buddha way. Buddha way has been stained. Oh, no. Okay. There's something really kind of delightful when you can live in so in harmony, kind of with the precept, and know when to break it, even when to do that. And you reminded me of a situation where we were spending the summer like this. I was a community, and we had a Sangha member who had a valve replaced in his heart. And I'll give you a choice. Do you want titanium or porcine? But, so he went with the metal valve, and they did this big surgery and opened his chest and all these things. And so in that, he really wanted to practice. He wanted to practice because he got really, really close to not making it. And so it's a really powerful response. I just think about that. When I got really close like that, all I wanted to do was practice, and all I wanted to do was call my grandma. All I wanted to do is tell people I love them and just want to practice really hard. So, so he's got this titanium valve, and he's just a few weeks out of surgery, and he wants to know if he can come for a summer session, for summer practice period. And so he said, yes. And it was my job, because this were a bunch of New York City people, so none of them drove. So it was my job to to drive him to one of his follow-up appointments. So we were in this container of like weeks of practice at this point. And we have to go leave and go through towns over to get his blood work done and a bunch of stuff. So I bring him to the doctor's appointment, and we stopped on the way home at the pharmacy and get the medicine. And I'm standing there in CVS, and it's just like candy bars. They're just like everywhere, and they're just like colorful. And like, I've been eating tofu for months. It's just like, what's a Kit Kat? So I got a little kick out. What's a big deal? Driving back. But it's like, what's the big deal? But actually, what happened was, this guy, he was just ashen gray. He was still not very well. And so he was doing Kinhin, and I saw that he was wobbly. And I took him out of the Kinhin line, and it was pitch black. And we went out on the grass, just like out on here, and we just laid on the grass so he could catch his breath, because that's a sensation that they have. I just can't breathe. He's laying in there and he can't catch his breath, and I'm surely his blood sugar is probably in the basement. And I literally remembered I have a Kit Kat in my sleeve. And we stayed on the lawn, right just feet from everybody, meditating. And we're just like eating chocolate in the dark. We're staring at the stars. Oh, I'm just like, what a terrible Zen student. And then he reached over and he put his hand, put my hand on his heart. And you could just feel this metal thing going. And he said, I can hear it. I can hear it while I sit. So we went back into the Zendo. Let me just listen. I was breaking the piece of left, right, and center, right? I mean, I was looking about candy bars. Ooh, how about this? I was breaking the container in the session, but I had to do that. It seems to uphold the Buddha way there. So sometimes you have to, like, as the web in Greece. That you kind of have to. Sometimes that's how you have to uphold the web. Thank you. Means. It means I have time for one more question, I think, and then we're going to have just a teeny little break. Doesn't even have to be a good one.
A question for you.
Oh, we have two. One set, we get Matt, and then you'll do your close.
Matt, do you have a comment to make? Okay. You were just talking about, you and Mike were talking about a hotel And I didn't really make the connection when Mike said it, but it's starting to make more sense now that you've repeated it. And I think about myself and how I've struggled with mental health in many different ways, and how millions of people struggle with mental health. It feels to me that that really aligns well with the concept of the lobby. I feel like when I'm in a tough place, I've left myself in a hotel room, and I've let myself stay there for a long time because I thought I was the only one experiencing those mental health issues. I thought I was the only one who had those struggles, but in reality, I'm not. I think that there's a lot of people who are stuck up there, not just for mental health reasons, but they feel that they are alone. In reality, there's many people who feel the same way, maybe for different reasons. But I thought, I don't know, I saw that parallel in many ways for people who are struggling. And how important it is to remember that other people are struggling just as you are. Thank you for the reminder. Jyoti, excuse me.
Yeah, my question is this. Personally, I'm not into separation at all. I see wherever I go, I see separation. And my question is, I think we're suffering more because we went to into separation a long time ago. And it's worldwide race. It's not just one particular. And I'm saying, like, I think the problem is we're coming to the head of it where separation's got to go and unification's got to come into the picture. And so I'm just wondering, this seems like it'd be a beginning right here of a unification coming from separation. And I can see the difference. I can see the difference. I can see the people shifting more here, not so much just into silence, but I also see that people want to get rid of suffering. And suffering is what I teach too. I teach yoga. And I tell my folks that suffering is separation. And we need to get rid of separation and come into unification. How can we work more towards that besides just here? But once we leave here, what will be the practice wherever we go? Is it just bodhisattva? Is it a heart chakra? Or what do you see? Live in DC, right? So.
But a lot of people, certainly acting like they're separate, right?
Is what?
There's a lot of people acting like they're separate, right?
Right.
Yeah. Oh, what do we do about that? What do we do about that? This is a question that kind of Buddha got asked, and a lot of teachers get asked, like, what do you do? Like, I'm on the path, and what's wrong with this guy? Like, why can't he get, why can't we come on over? What can we do in those situations? What do you think?
I think be patient. Be patient and understand that people have come from a background of trauma, and the best thing to the best way I can support someone is by being compassionate, by focusing on using unconditional love. I think this is the perfect season to go and practice that. It's to when I leave here, it's to go wherever I go. It's to come with that practice, be compassionate towards people more than I have been. Let's say it like that. And see how it goes,
Absolutely. That's what Mike was talking about too in his talk. I mean, it's one of my favorite Buddhist words, bodhicitta, this idea of wanting other people to succeed,
It hurts,
wanting to
man.
see them
That's
do
the
well.
pain. That's the pain. The pain for me is when I know, but I can't tell you. Everybody has their own destiny, right? And it just hurts to see even family members for that matter, to see, or if I go to a store, I mean, it just seems like the more you, but the more I practice love, actually practice love with myself, then I can give it to someone else. But if I practice anger with myself, hey, I can't do anything. So I'm saying, just it seems like, it's like a experiment. You have to do a spiritual experiment with yourself that you have to figure out, do I just work on myself more or do I just go serve more?
Yeah. I was like that this great old quote, like, what do I do about others in my practice? Or how do I help others? And then the guru answers, what others, When you just like kind of break down that separation and you see, these are all just different emanations, expressions of me, or even if I want to stay at the surface level, if things improve in Southeast DC, it's going to improve for me too, right? I mean, I understand that, but it's fine. It's hard to do that, and you get kind of burnt out. So how do we do that? There was a koan about it, and he says, in the titular, kind of the main crux, the main line in it, he says, how do you do it? And he said, it's just like reaching back for your pillow at night. And the reason he says that is he's like, oh, I've got all these ideas about how do I help others, and I want to do this, and I want to be good in the world, and what do I do about that? And he's like, oh, it's just like you. It's just like how you do. It's just so natural. It's just so natural. Like I'm half asleep and I just need to do that to be comfortable. Like it's unselfconscious. Even if it's taking care of myself, making myself more comfy, it's unselfconscious. It's just we used to do these street retreats and you go out and live on the street and practice Zen. And you do Dokusan in an alley and you sleep either on a mission or on the shelter if they have room. And otherwise you sleep on the street. And it's like a really wild thing. And, you beg for money. And all the money that we would receive, we would come together at the end and what organization do we want to give it to? Well, that shelter was really awesome. That put us up. Let's all give it there. And it's really problematic. It's a really tough thing to do. It's really weird. It's really wild. But one thing I will say is that it was always the poor people who gave money. It was always the poor people who gave money because they recognized that humanity. They recognized struggle. So what you're saying is I'm trying to awaken. I'm trying to live the most awake life I can. And I feel this stuff and I want to help these other people. So that's the natural next step after awakening, just like Mike's talk, is we have these feelings and we want to help. It's the awakening of compassion in us. So now it's your job is to figure out what you're going to do, how you're going to serve it, how you're going to show up.
One more thing I want to say to you. I want to share one more thing with you, right? The things I want to share with you is that for me, I'm half black and half white. So being of that background, just like Bob Marley, Jimi Hendrix, people like that. And it's like, what is wrong with y'all? Why can't you just let it go? I'm in the middle of it. I look from the left, I look from the right. I'm like, I'm from both sides, but you still know, I'm saying? So my makeup is like, I can't be too much this way, I can't be too much that way. I'm saying like, what's wrong with these people, guy? Or Buddha, whatever you want to call it. It's like, it doesn't make sense. Okay, it doesn't make sense. If I'm all African or European or Indian or Chinese or Japanese, okay, it's a different thing. But I'm sitting here witness. I'm half black and half white. I'm saying, what is wrong with y'all? Why can't you just be more kind and loving? So easy to do. But yeah, what it is, it's privileges and power and greed. And these things have been going for thousands of years and we still practice it to this day. Hereditarily. We passed it on from G. Like I told my son, we stop here, but I mean, with my grandsons, we ain't doing that. So I just want to say that. It doesn't make sense to see, everybody suffering out here. It doesn't make sense because of greed. So I leave it at that, If you don't like me, I still love you. Peace.
I think I'll change my definition of what the precepts are just a description of Buddha. Maybe we'll just change it. We just gotta be more friendly, be more nice.
Yeah.
How about that? Let's leave it at that.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.